Okay, the other thing I thought I'd let you know, for those that are interested, we had, those who identified themselves as part of our group, and hopefully everybody did, if you were part of the miners group, we had 76 people that came in yesterday, and I think I got the day before's list also, and then with the ones coming today, anyway, I think our total right now is about 89, that includes all the kids and everything, but that's a pretty good turnout, so I thought you might be pleased to hear that. And then before I start, Gary Bannister has a couple of poems he'd like to read for us.
Very serious poems, so I want you to, but I think seriously, okay? My name is Gary Bannister, my sister Gloria, and I was here from 1941 to 1949, and thinking about the continuity of the village, there was one person that I thought gave continuity to it, and that was Al Holzhauser. How many of you did not know Al Holzhauser? See, I knew. Well, Ruth Holzhauser is here today with her daughter, Mary Joy, her husband Ferd, and her two sons are here. But I ran across a poem about Mary Joy that I wanted to share. There are two things about the Holden Village when you come back to Holden. One is the people, and one is nature. And the first one is about Mary Joy, the good little girl, by A.A. Milne. It's funny how often they say to me, Mary Joy, have you been a good girl? Have you been a good girl? And when they have said it, they say it again. Have you been a good girl? Have you been a good girl? I go to a party. I go to the tea. I go to an aunt for a week at the sea. And I come back from school or from playing a game. Wherever I come from, it's always the same. Well, have you been a good girl? Mary Joy? It's always the end of the loveliest day. Have you been a good girl? Have you been a good girl? I went to the zoo and they waited to say, have you been a good girl? Have you been a good girl? Well, what did they think that I went there to do? And why should I want to be bad at the zoo? And should I be likely to say if I had? And so that's why it's funny of Mummy and Dad this. Asking and asking in case I was dead. Well, have you been a good girl? Mary Joy? Give her a hand.
Gary, a hand.
John Kirsch was asking me, so you ever hike in the hills? I was always in the hills. Little Knoll. Anybody know where Little Knoll is? Always a little knoll up the creek. I had a rope in the trees, and I used to go to the village, and I used to be out at the water boxes. How many remember the water boxes? The water boxes. In the original village, there were these big wooden boxes that had water. And so I used to go, and I used to daydream, and I ran across this poem that is not quite applicable, because we don't have birches around here, I don't think, but this is by Robert Frost, all the birches, and it reminded me of my childhood in the surroundings. When I see birches bend to left and right across the lines of straighter, darker trees, I have to think some boy's been swinging them. Ah, the swinging doesn't bend them down to stay. Ice storms do that. Often you must have seen them loaded with ice a sunny winter morning after a rain. They click upon themselves as the breeze rises and turn many-colored as the stir cracks and crazes their enamel. Soon the sun's warmth makes them shed crystal shells shattering and avalanching on the snow crust such heaps of broken glass to sweep away. You'd think the inner dome of heaven had fallen. They are dragged to the withered bracken by the load, and they seem not to break. Though once they are bowed so low for so long, they never right themselves. You may see their trunks marching in the woods. Years afterwards, they trail their leaves on the ground like girls on hands and knees that throw their hair before them over their heads to dry in the sun. But I was going to say, when truth broke in with all her matter of fact about the ice storms, I should prefer them to have some boy bend them as he went out and in to fetch the cows. Some boy too far away from town to learn baseball, whose only play was what he found himself, summer or winter, and to play all alone. One by one, he subdued his father's trees by writing them down over and over again until he took the stiffness out of them. And not one that hung limp, not one was left for him to conquest. He learned all there was to learn about not launching out too soon and so not carrying the tree away clear to the ground. He always kept his poise to the top branches, climbing carefully with the same pains you use to fill a cup up to the brim and even above the brim. Then he flung outward, feet first, with a swish, kicking his way down through the air to the ground. So was I once myself a swinger of birches. And so I dream of going back to thee. It's when I'm weary of considerations and life is too much like a pathless wood where your face burns and tickles with the cobwebs broken across it and one eye is weeping. I see a twig's having lashed across their opening. I like to get away from earth a while and then come back to it and begin over. Now, may no fate willfully misunderstand me and half grant what I wish and snatch me away not to return. Earth's the right place for me. I don't know where it's likely to go better. Now, I like to go by climbing a birch tree and climb the black branches up a snow-white trunk toward heaven until the tree could bear no more but dipped its top and sent me down again. That would be good, both going and coming back. One could do worse than be a swinger of birches. Thank you.
Linda, I want to make a couple quick announcements. I apologize. Just a couple schedule things to keep in mind for the afternoon. The museum is open all day, but at 1 o'clock there will be some transportation provided up the hill to help folks get up there. Norm Day has generously offered to unlock the door to the mine portal for a little bit this afternoon at also about 1 o'clock, and that's a chance to peek in, not go in, but peek into the portal at least. And so the van or bus that goes up to the museum this afternoon will go there first and then back down to the museum. But if you're walking up the hill, you can walk up to the portal about 1 o'clock also and get a chance to peek into the mine. That will be just for a short time that he's got available, but might be a treat we wouldn't normally expect to have. And then 3 o'clock is the group photo outside on the road here outside Koinonia, and then some other video documentation perhaps. And then 3:45, another slide program on the homes of Holden this afternoon. So keep all those things in mind.
What time does the bus go up?
It'll be at 1 o'clock.
It leaves here at 1?
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, during the last 4 summers, I've been up here working in the museum as a volunteer part of the time during the summer. And sure, I was here, Rick asked me to do some programs about what it was like living here as a kid. This past summer, I put together a program that we call Bridging the Communities, because one of the things that I found about coming back and spending time here in the villages is kind of mind-boggling what the similarities are between the community that we had for 20 years and the community that Holden Village has now had for 40 years. They celebrated their 40th anniversary this year. They call it 40 Years in the Wilderness was their theme. And they've been there twice as long as us. But over the years, there's lots of different activities that come, and you'll find so many similarities between then and now. So this is a little program I put together, some slides, Bridging the Communities. But to start it out, we start out with the man who started it all, and as many people walking in this room recognize, but this is J.H. Holden, the man who made the ore strike and started it all. And he made that in the early 1896, 95. And from that time on up until the 30s, on and off, there was activity going on in here. As Norm mentioned last night, there were tunnels being dug and buildings being built early on. But to start out with, let's take a look at some early workmen. Like I said, very early in the century, people were up here building buildings and working. And this is what Railroad Creek looked like in the early years before it was diverted, when Howe Sound came. Kind of just meandered through the valley. And along with the creek came our first set of bridges, some pretty crude bridges across the creek. Then there was some early road building going on. And as I said, a lot of this went on during the early years. And then in the late 1920s, Britannia took a lease on the mine and ultimately purchased it. And in the early 30s, they started building in earnest. More constructive road building. And then they started building buildings. Now, the building actually stopped for a time during the Depression. So they were in here in the early 30s and did building, but then again, it started in earnest in 1937. And that's when the real activity started, the school started, and the very first shipment of ore went out in 1938, in April of 1938. This is a picture of the celebration on the dock at Lucerne when the first ore went out. And if you look in the museum, you'll see newspaper articles and big pictures. There was a huge reception in Chelan at the other end. All the politicians were there in another big parade, welcoming that first shipment of ore down lake in 1938. The company built the community, a company town, and this is a shot at the early days, and if you look down the street now, a lot of things still look the same. They wanted a good community, they wanted productive workers, so they provided the recreation hall, and they provided facilities. They had the dorm rooms for the miners who were here without families. And my, don't those beds look familiar? So as you will see, some things don't change, some things do. The roof's been spruced up a little bit, but there's still a lot of similarities. And they still got those sinks and mirrors and lights there. We're still using those. That's what they started out with. And then, of course, they provided for feeding them, and there's the dining hall as it looked in those days. And in addition to the main dining hall, where the food that was served was considerably different to today, you got to keep in mind that the 30s and 40s were the meat and potato eras. They also had a place where the miners could make their lunch, and it was the corner of the dining hall had an area where they could, you know, build these huge sandwiches lunch. Now today they have a sandwich bar too. It's called the Hike House Bar. But I can assure you the veggies, the trail mix, and hummus that you find there today is not what was there in my place. But the concept is the same, a place to make your lunch. We had a doctor in those days, and some of the doctors in the later years even delivered babies up here. And the last baby born was in late April of 1957, shortly before the mine closed. This was an examining room. There was also a full dental room, and I'm sure plenty of you remember, the kids remember that when the dentist came in, the awful time when we all had to go up and have go through that ordeal. That building now has been remodeled. It's where they house long-term staff. But again, when you look at it from the outside, it still looks pretty similar to what it did in those days. The gymnasium looks pretty bare in those days. It was brand new. It was a state-of-the-art gymnasium. Lots of activities there. We played basketball. We had all our Christmas programs there, the community Christmas tree, movies 3 days a week. Lots of things to remember. Basketball teams used to come in and play from the outside, so that was a big activity during the winter. And of course, we had plays on the stage, all those school plays and operettas that we did. Today, the winter staff that stays here, they still play basketball in there. They pull out the basketball nets. They tell me, and they still have some games there. They don't use it as much during the winter for programs. They use this room in here because there's a smaller group here, but they do still play basketball in there when it's cold in the winter. Dances were a big part of the mining days. Not only the New Year's dance, but the Muckers' Balls and other events. I do not have a slide yet. We're working on finding one. We found one picture, but they do have dances periodically here too. In fact, some of the previous miners reunions, you guys remember the folk dancers were here, and we were dancing in the VC again in the village days. So they do have dances there. When I was here this summer, they were had a group doing line dancing in there. The bowling alley, as we enjoy today, and of course, those of you remember how important those men's and women's leagues were. The standings were always published in the newspaper each week. And the bowling is still very popular because when families come during the summer, that bowling alley is busy all the time that it's open. Everybody's down there enjoying it. Of course, they don't have any paid pin setters back there, so it's do-it-yourself. And I'm sure some of you guys probably worked as pin setters in those days for the leagues because I know that was another way to make extra money. The pool hall looks a little different now because the card tables are gone from the back, the poker tables, and I get a kick out of the summer when people are in here and we do programs and I tell them that they're sitting in the card playing chairs while they're doing their programs. And of course the walls are more bare because they've been decorated now, but I can assure you those pool tables still get plenty of use just like they did in our day. The fountain lunch. Well, in our day, it had a lot more than ice cream. I'm sure you guys remember going there for hamburgers and steak dinners. That's where the family went out to dinner. And of course, some of the chairs on this side have been taken out to make room for the people coming in. But if you notice around the end, even though they're painted, some of those original chairs are still there. And if you go down the back stairs and go out and close the door and look at it, it still says fountain lunch on the back door. So that sign is still there. And we remember this because our mother was one of the ones that worked in there. And the schoolhouse. The school started with one room in 1937 and had two rooms by 1939. Okay, all of you with this picture, raise your hand. This is from the 40s, sometime in the 40s. Come on, you guys, don't you recognize yourself? Raise your hand if you're in that picture. This one's from the 50s. I don't know all the kids, but I recognize one of the Davison boys, and I recognize Doug Robertson, who was Richard Robertson's little brother, is sitting back there. This is Doug, and this is Bobby Davidson. I don't know any of the others. Does anybody else know any of the others?
Mary Joy is right there.
Mary Joy?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if that's Mary Joy. Or I think this is after you were gone, Mary Joy, maybe because these kids were in the big room.
Sure looks like her.
I think that might have been.
Because the Robertsons were younger. He was younger.
Yeah, Doug was younger than I was. I think this is the big room. This is Fields' room. But I'm wondering if that's the Rover girl.
Oh, yes.
Because I think she wore glasses.
Yeah.
Do you remember Mrs. Field?
Did she look?
The kind of a blur. You don't remember all those kids students from 10 years ago? Oh, my gosh.
Remember Gary
Madison? And the last day of school, you know, there was over 120 kids in the school by that time. That's one of the things that the guests here during the summer really find interesting in the school was that large.
Do you know what year this was?
This is the last day of school photo.
1957?
1957.
Oh. 120.
There was 120, I think, about that time. That's what the literature says in the articles. Well, in 1953, when I was in sixth grade, they opened up the basement because you had to drop off fifth grade. We had sixth, seventh, and eighth grade in the basement with Mrs. Field because they needed the fourth classroom. And then after that, then the next year we got to go back upstairs, and I think the second or third grade came down the basement or something. So schools get pretty big when the baby boomers hit in the 50s.
Is Mrs. Fields in that photograph?
The teachers are there somewhere, but I'm not sure. I thought they were there. I think they're in the back somewhere.
I don't see them.
But I don't see them. There is another picture. This is one of the pictures that was out of the world when they did a lot of the articles when the close down was coming. This is one of the ones from there. Early days, the houses were up on Honeymoon Heights, and this is a picture of what the houses looked like in that area. Some of us that didn't come here until the 50s, those were already gone, but the remains were still up there. In fact, you can still find some remains if you hike up there. And then this is what a winter shot of Honeymoon Heights. Again, with all the houses and the snow. And this is a winter shot of the Chalet Hill, the circle we called it. And the blank spot is where the slide is. I haven't found it. We had a screenshot somewhere, but I couldn't find that slide yesterday when I was putting these back together. But that gives you a look of it. And I know a few of you kids have slid down that hill, and I think Bill's brother knocked somebody down sliding down that hill.
Mr. Curzon didn't like that very much. He came out and talked to us about sliding across the road in Yorkville.
Probably wasn't the safest thing in the world to be doing.
No.
And I heard somebody telling about hitting the stop sign with the toboggan or breaking the toboggan. And this is the third level shot of Winston Camp. This is another one for people who visit during the summer. They're really kind of an eye-opener for them to see how many homes were up there. And you kids that grew up there like I did will understand my reaction this summer when some lady was sitting at the table and said something about, well, she'd hiked up here before, right after the mine had closed, and she'd seen all those shacks up there, and I about came right up off my chair and explained to her what nice homes we had. Because I think we remember those very comfortable homes. And you know, we had, for those of you who are not part of the miners group, when we were here as kids, we had a lot of youth activities. We did all these programs in school. We had Cub Scouts and Bluebirds. We had Boy Scouts. Campfire Girls, and they were very active groups and supported by the community. The Campfire Girls would go out to Grand Council Fire in Wenatchee, and we'd all go. We got perfect attendance 3 years in a row and earned a flag. The Boy Scouts would go out to the jamborees that they had around Chelan, those groups. And you know, today in the village, they have groups called Miners and Junior Miners, and the kids that come here for the summer with their families or come to visit for a while, they participate in all kinds of youth activities for their age group, just like we did. So it's another one of those areas where you see a lot of similarities between then and now. This is a look at the first row of houses during the summertime, or spring perhaps, because there's still quite a bit of snow on Bonanza there. And then this is a winter shot in the same location. And that big house that stands out in all these pictures, most of you probably remember, was the Rogers house. It was a three-story house because of the large size of the family. And then when we lived here in the 50s, we lived next door to them in the house behind. And by that time, they'd converted the upper floor to an apartment because all the kids were grown and gone. And this is a look down the middle row in wintertime.
Which row is that?
This is down the middle row. It's taken in, I think, in the area where the Fields house was.
Yeah.
Looking down that road.
Where are you looking? West?
West. You're looking west.
Yes, right.
On the middle row.
Well, Mary Joy, your intersection up to your house would be on
the cul-de-sac is probably where that
cut the bank is
down here. We didn't call them cul-de-sacs in those days. And here's the scout group. And Bill's in that picture. Rich Robertson, Pat Sims, and Nigel's down below.
Nigel down below. Where's Pat Sims? Oh, he's standing up.
This is Pat Sims.
Right. Who else?
Bill thinks this is Steve Kaiser.
It is.
And he thinks this is Hemp Hill. Is that
Dick?
Not sure.
I don't think so now.
Not sure.
Hemp Hill's up on the upper right.
No, that's the other
one. Who's this guy?
Isn't that Hemp Hill up there on the upper right?
Upper right or left?
No, that's... Ooh.
Turn them on.
There you go. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. One of the big popular things was the operettas. Everybody in this picture, raise your hand, come on. This is from the 40s. I'm not sure which play this was, but...
Jack and the Beanstalk.
Jack and the Beanstalk.
I think William Small is back there, right in the middle. You can just see his face. Oh, I think that's William Small.
Well, not in the 40s, Joe. Not in the 40s.
When else would it be?
Which was gay?
Well, I don't know if he did, but...
He would be in the 40s.
This one?
No.
Way up.
Top of the cap.
Yeah, this one?
No, higher. That's Bill.
That almost looks like Jackie Wolf off...
Oh, that is, yeah.
Off in the right by himself.
Who was that, Gary?
Estelle Rogers, who said, her face behind the cap. Those school programs, as you all recall.
I can't tell, there's some...
Who's up to the left in the back row?
I don't know, I can't quite identify.
I know that in the 50s we did...
That was like Gail about the middle. Middle right there, just that's her grin, right?
Yeah, it's gotta be her. In the 1950s, we did a Frog Prince operetta, and John Phillips was the Frog Prince, the Frog and the Prince. And then we did a Robin Hood one, again, which you guys did in the 40s, we did it again in the 50s.
I was Robin Hood.
You were Robin Hood.
You want to hear me sing?
Well, in the 50s, I was Lady Catherine, and you don't want to hear me sing either. And we had a guy named Phil that was playing Robin Hood that year.
Was it the same operetta, you think?
I think it was the same operetta, Under the Greenwood Tree, when you guys did. But it had been long enough that it was a lot of new people, so we did it.
See, Jack and the Beanstalk was done later years ago.
Well, bus arrival and departure were important in the mining days, and one of the things I like to show the villagers that come now is, you know, look how these people are dressed up. And compared to, you know, how times have changed. I mean, the ladies have got their best coats and some high heels, and the bus driver back there looks like, I don't know if he's the bus driver, but the guy in the back has a tie on, another guy has a sport jacket, so.
Do you know what year this was?
I do not know what year this was taken.
I don't recognize any of the people.
I don't either.
Look at the
I think this is, slide.
I sure don't recognize anybody there.
This slide, I think, is out of some of the ones that Nigel had that we did.
Some of the strangers.
Well, it could have been relatives leaving too, you know.
Yeah.
4th of July, remember the 4th of July and Labor Day picnics? They were a big thing up here. Races, we earned money.
Yes.
All the fun races. And then we had a pie eating contest, those famous berry pies. I remember when we moved here, my brother, older brother, Jim, unseated, whoever the reigning champion was at the time, man, he could really gobble those things down. And then there was the big feast at noon, and one of the things I try to make sure and point out to villagers is those are not beer bottles there, because in those days your soda pop came in all those brown, dark colored bottles, so. That was the big feast we had at noon.
No twist.
All the pop and ice cream you could consume.
No kidding. And all that potato salad. And then the baseball game in the afternoon. And this one shows those bleachers pretty full over there, and I'm sure the ones on this side were pretty full too.
Is that at the ballpark?
That's at the ballpark. And that's the baseball game, because that was after lunch, then they had the big baseball game. All the races and stuff were in the morning. Remember, besides all the kids' races too, the ladies did nail driving and log sawing contests.
Grease pole climbing contest.
First year we were here, Nigel Adams broke his arm trying to dive over the high jump bar. Skiing was a big part of our activities too, and you know, they had the ski tow up there. I don't know if it was here in the 40s or for sure when it was put up there. I do know that it got wiped out by an avalanche once in the 50s that came down and stopped about 15 yards from Yates's house, but it got rebuilt and they started skiing again, and that was still, you know, very much a part of our winter fun in those days. These pictures obviously were taken in the 50s because they're in color. There's another shot of the skiing up in that area. Nice picture of Bonanza in the background, too. But unfortunately, times changed, and as we know, the ore ran low and the prices dropped, and our wonderful little community came to an end. There's a picture of the sledding hill. Now, that's the one up at the far end of Winston Camp, which was the steeper hill, but I also know it was fun to start at the top row up by Yates' house and that, and you got a good run, you could go down, instead of going to that hill, you turned and went the other way down toward the phone box and all the way to the bottom row if you got a good run.
Riggs, is your house up on the left?
No.
This is looking downhill from that intersection up on the middle row, right to the new addition. The houses on the right-hand side are part of that new addition that was built right at the end of the 40s and 50s. That's that last steep hill. If you're going out to the ballpark, it's the last hill that you pass that goes up into the middle row.
Yeah, that's Ding Ding Dunn's house.
No, his was down at the other corner.
Oh.
Yeah. Ding Ding Dunn's house is the first road that you come to. Where they have a little sign that says Miner's Village. You walk up there. His house was right on the left, and then there was a phone box there on the corner that had a telephone on. And then the house went back behind, and Cisco's was back. Because you had been back in another little cul-de-sac.
That's the second road.
So this hill, this picture is taken from the top of the hill at the far end. With the closure of the mine, of course, most of us left our houses behind. Some tore them down. Here's one that's being partially dismantled. I don't know how many total were taken down, but there were a few that actually took it, dismantled them and trucked the lumber out.
We took the windows.
And then, of course, the time came when they had to burn and be demolished. And 20 years of industry and heavy industry and lots of good family life for many of us and many happy memories kind of came to an end at that time.
Did you?
But we kind of owned.
Did you own the houses or did the company own the houses?
Up in the Miner's Village, the family owned the houses. We did not own the land, we just owned the houses. The chalets were management houses, and those were provided by the company, and the house went with the position. Some of you got, your dads got promoted to move, right?
Yeah.
Two or three houses down the hill. Unfortunately for us, our village came to an end, but you know, we were talking, coming up on the boat, Bill and Leilani and I have all traveled to Alaska this summer, and one of the things we've seen is a lot of empty flat spots where mining towns used to be. We feel very fortunate that we can still come back to where we lived 50 years ago, or 40 years ago. So I kind of call this guy a prospector too. For those of you who don't know him, his name is Wes Krieg. And he's the young man who saw the advertisement of a mining village for sale and started writing letters to Hal Sound, inquiring about getting the properties for, at that time, what he thought would be a youth camp, for church youth camp. And he wrote his first letter in 1957. He ultimately wrote three letters, and his last letter arrived at Hal Sound in 1960, about the time that the last hope for selling it to the big resort that was going to come in here, those plans fell through. Aren't we lucky? This didn't become a commercial establishment, but those plans fell through, and Hal Sound at that time decided to donate the properties to the Lutherans so they could set up a village. And from that, we started another 40 years of history. But he's the just patient but persistent young man who made it all come about, and he was in this village every summer. He ran the pool hall until he passed away. It was about a year and a half ago, and I think Wes passed away. Delightful young man. I used to just really get a kick out of talking to him. And if any of you have been up here as guests and visited with him in the pool hall, he was quite a character.
He must have been discussing selling or giving up the place in 52 already. Because I was at LBI at that time, and I remember us, the Pastor Stein talking about it.
52?
62.
Now, because it was
something about
it wouldn't have been Holden at that time. It would have been different. Well, here's a bus of another kind. This is a group of people called the Forerunners. I'm sorry, thank you. But in 1961 to start the cleanup. Now think about the fact that these buildings have been sitting here empty for 4 years. What a job they had. So just got a few pictures. This is a group of them gathered on the Chouet Lawn. Now here's the early workers of the lunar years. You saw the early workers of the mining days. A little bit different attire here, but here they are gathered on the Chouet Lawn. Also take a look, you'll notice there's hardly any trees on the hill. Keep in mind, it's 1961.
Here's I think that man with the hat was Gil Berg.
It is.
He was one of the, he was the first Polk mayor here before they had a director, a manager.
Right, I got a picture of him later in the series here. This is the workers repairing the roof on the hotel building. There's hanging a bunch of mattresses out. It says dorm two, now it says lodge two. See, it has the dorm two sign there. Somebody cleaning dorm rooms, and some of the pictures that they have, the amount of dirt and dust you can imagine that had gathered in those 4 years. And this group came in, and keep in mind when they came in, the power lines were already gone, so they had no power, they had no hot water or running water. So they did bring some generators in after they'd been here a few weeks, but they had quite a formidable task. Cleaning windows, and there's somewhere in one of the narratives that quotes how many, somebody counted how many windows they cleaned and repaired, but it was a tremendous job. Again, you can see how much had accumulated in that time. Well, after they got their generators in, they started making use of some of our left behinds. Here they found an old washing machine up in the village, so they had it hooked up to the generator. And they did all their cooking on those the fireplaces behind the chalets. That's where they cooked all their food when they came in that summer. And even then they started the tone of that is very much Holden Village today. Play hard, work hard, Bible study, you know, a refreshing, a place to come for refreshment. Refreshing your soul. They took some hikes in those days, early days. Even the early group went on some hikes during that summer. And they would take time out every day for some nature studies. And then on Sunday, they had their services. Now think about the conditions when they came here, but in the 50s, you know, when we went to church, everybody dressed up. And of course, during the mining years, we also had church services in the village center. In the 40s, there was a pastor that came, different pastors that came in. There was an Episcopal pastor that came regularly from Wenatchee. And when he was reassigned, or when he took a new assignment and was leaving Wenatchee, I saw a copy of the letter that John Curzon wrote to the church council telling them that it was an absolute necessity that they assign somebody else to continue to come up and hold those services. And then when we were here in the 50s, there was a fellow named Morgan that was working in the carpenter shop, but he had left the seminary for a while, and he did ultimately go back and finish and become an ordained minister, but he held Sunday services for us, just basic Christian services, so we did have services, church services up here in the mining years too, and of course that's very much a part of the theme of the village today. This is a picture of the village taken from behind, and the early arrival when they came. You can see how bare the tailings look at that time. And the trees aren't near as grown up as they are now. And this is a picture of Chalet Hill as it looked when they arrived. You can see a few people had TV antennas by the end of the time.
Yeah.
And this is a picture that was taken of when they came, of that first row, and you'll see the rock wall there, and that first house is the one that the folks lived in.
Yeah.
And then this is a picture after the demolition and the burning was done. And if you do walk up there, you're still going to see that rock wall today. It's pretty, there's a lot of trees growing up around it. And you can't get, if you go up by the Forest Service cabin, you can get up toward the wall. You can't go in the other way because of the drain field. Also mentioned to you, those of you that are hiking up, if you walk up to the ballpark, shortly before you get to where that bench is and where the orange netting is to, if you look on the right-hand side, you'll see a little piece of a chunk of rock wall that has cement top on it. This summer, some of the nice young guys that work on the Maverick crew went up and moved that out of the drain field for me and got it down there. The Sims, who lived in that house, when they cemented that rock wall, the dog's pal, that big black cocker spaniel they had, his footprints are in the top of that cement. So I had to move that down there so I can use it when I go do the programs in the summer. I can show the kids, you know, the footprints. So if you walk up there, take time to feel the footprints in the rock wall. This is a picture of the mill rolls that looked when they came, that group in 1961. And they're just, well, and again, you can see Field's house on the left with that big stone fireplace there. And then this is a picture down the mill row after the demolition. So change came. But like I said, you're going to find a lot of things are the same. Here's the footbridge that they found when they came. This is the one that we were familiar with in the mining days. Now, some of you in the 40s saw a different one that I know got wiped out by an avalanche and was rebuilt. But this is the one that was there when they came. And again, another bridge across Railroad Creek. And this is Carol and Mary Hinderly. And as the gentleman mentioned, this is the guy who was the first director and really started the programs up here and served for many years and set the tone for the village. They adopted a summer theme every year, and if you make a trip to the museum, you'll see a list of all the different themes they've had over the years. The other thing that is so prominent here in Holden, if you visit, is Holden Hilarity, and that was the theme the second year, Holden Hilarity. But he was very much a person that believed in you got to have a lot of fun and do a lot of crazy things. And that's one of the fun things to come in here, just like we had lots of fun and a lot of laughter and a lot of things going on in the mining days. So you find it when you come to the village now. They have different holidays they celebrate. They kids get a special holiday here, by the way. They get Sun Over Buckskin Day. That's a school holiday for them. In January when the sun comes back up. But anyway, these people were the ones instrumental in starting the village and moving it forward. Now here's a picture of the dining hall in the village days, and of course a lot of the tables and chairs are still there. But it also became a little bit more. It was the scene of, they had the man at the piano was named Beanie, and he started what they called Beanie Sings in the early years, and they still have his songbooks there, and they still on occasion do that. He's long passed away, but his wife, who will be 90 next spring, still comes every summer for a couple of weeks and stays. She's a delightful old lady. And she did, and she still does a little bit of that, but she did a lot of nature walks and nature talks. They wanted somebody to do programs for the people that come to learn about all the plants, to tell them about all the plants and stuff that grow here. And she didn't know anything, but she studied it all and learned it all. And she did programs on all the nature walks. She's also one of the ladies that was instrumental in transplanting a bunch of the, they went up to where our homes had been and dug up the flowers and brought them down and made a lot of the flower beds down here. She and a couple other ladies spent a good share of one summer bringing all those flowers down from our houses. So we've still got our flowers growing here, folks. And this is the first bridge that the village built across the creek after they took the other one down. And bus arrival and departure. Now their bus is a little bit different color. The outfits are different. And of course they have this nice new loading dock. But just as when the bus came in our days and we used to wait for the mail to be out and socialize at the post office, so do they meet the bus when it comes in, and a big group always sends the bus. When people are leaving, there's usually a big group about sending everybody off. And they have services and programs in the village center. This is one in the early days before the ceiling was painted, which was done in the 1970s. And this is a picture of this room. And this is where a lot of the educational sessions are held. Now this picture was taken when they were still using the fireplace, but they and had the chimney, but they ultimately determined that they were losing most of the heat and it wasn't really very functional. So the chimney's gone and we still have the beautiful stone sculpture. This is a picture taken inside the school building. I don't know if this, I don't think this is an actual school session. I think it's one of the Narnia groups. The school teachers that are here now, I'm going to work with them to get a current picture of the school building. But they do have 12 grades here. They do have through high school. They are part of the Chelan School District. Rather than being their own separate school district, and they're considered a wilderness school under the state terms. It's called a small but necessary school, and they do bring in remote but necessary. Anyway, they bring in boarding students to help keep the numbers up high enough. And when I was here last summer for the Elder Hostel, I happened to be here and got to attend the graduation ceremony for the one graduate, high school graduate, and she chose as her location for the graduation ceremony the third level. out on the tailing pile, the rock pile, the third level. So we were all up there while they had the graduation ceremony. And one thing a little bit different than our day, we didn't have jet airplanes flying over. But the Whidbey guys practice here, their low radar detection. And so right in the middle of her graduation ceremony, she got a military flag on. And he was pretty low. But anyway, it was kind of different than our formal graduation ceremony for our eighth graders, but then she chose to have it there. So they had a group in town and a guy with the drum, and they beat the drum and everybody walked all the way up. And then they took a van for those who couldn't walk, and we had the ceremony up there. So again, it kind of reminded graduation ceremonies for the eighth graders. And the kids still do programs. Here's a group that was entertaining. These pictures were taken from an album. In the 70s, they were doing a Disney night program. And as you can see, one of the things in the village, you make your costumes with that about whatever is available. So those mops came in pretty handy. And here's their 4th of July race. Now this is adults instead of the kids. And the second, there was another picture in the series in this photo album that we took the slide from that showed at the end of the race, Wes Creep jumped in just to run the last 10 feet. Just like he was the winner. Now their pie eating contest, they don't do the berries. They've got cream pies there. Look at the boys to go with those cream pies. You can see the one's already got whipped cream on her face. The other's got lemon hanging down. So, like I said, a lot of similarities. And the 4th of July parade. We didn't have parades in our days. We had everything up at the ballpark. But the 4th of July parade, this year's first year I was here. It was a lot of fun. The creativity in each work group or area makes an entry in the parade. And we had a little bit of fun. I had personal fun this summer because I was in the post office and the lady said, anybody that played music was supposed to meet and they were going to get a marching band together. And she said, we need a baton twirler. And I looked at her kind of funny. And some of you have seen the picture. There's, in the 50s, Margaret Wheeler had graduated from Chelan High School, was married to Bobby Hansen. It was a cascader, and we had a baton twirling group in the 50s. There were about 6 or 7, 8 girls, I think. And we performed up at the ballpark, and we performed at programs in the gym. And so that's where I learned to twirl a baton. So this year, I twirled a baton with the marching band, but nobody had a baton, so in keeping with Holden fashion, I got a broken pool stick and cut it off, and taped a rock on it to balance it, and tied some fabric on it, and made a baton and was in the parade. But it really made me remind our own fun 4th of July, and their parade is a big fun activity here. So 4th of July is a very special day. In fact, a lot of people reserve their spots early to come up here for the 4th of July. It's a fun time. And they have their picnics just like we did. Theirs aren't held up at the ballpark. They're out behind the dining hall, but good food and lots of fun. This year, for the 4th of July, they had homemade bagels for breakfast and brunch in the morning, and then the campers too. And of course, they do the skiing. Cross-country skiing more than the downhill skiing, but skiing is a very big part of the summer. Now, we've changed a little bit from an industrial center to retreat, so you'll notice a little bit added in the village in terms of looking at, the buildings look very similar, but now we have all these beautiful flower boxes hanging around here. And if you look on some of the lodges, the boxes that are hanging there are the old boxes out of the are the baskets out of the drive. And then they've got the flower boxes inside them. I think there's still one on the Lodge 6 porch, and I think there's one up on Lodge 2 or 3, so. Some of them are rotting, but they've been using those for quite a few years. So when you walk around, take a look at the flower boxes and see if you can spot one of the boxes out of the grime. And this is the current look at services in the village center since they've painted the ceiling. And then if you notice this summer and every year, whatever their theme is, there'll be something in the village center that represents the theme. And this year, you've seen the beautiful silk banners in there. I hope if you were at Vespers last night, if you walked in there today, that have the 40 years of the wilderness themes. And there's some gorgeous silk banners hanging up there that are painted that have different scenes around the village. And Christine Gelgi, the village artist, is the one who painted those banners. So this is what it looks like today. Again, that same room that we're so used to, the stage is still there. The benches are still there. Those benches, they, you know, they have pads on the bottom now. And I personally find it still a little bit hard to walk on that floor with my three shoes after all we've had encouraged to us that thou shalt not step on that floor without the gym shoes, but it's kind of changed. So anyway, it's 100 years of history. And this is the current bridge. We still have another bridge, and time goes on. But anyway, hopefully this gives you a little bit of look at how, just like when we were here and had some good times, they still have a lot of good times today, and they do many of the same things we do, just in a little bit different way. Time moves on. So, hope you enjoyed seeing a little bit of the pictures.